All right, welcome to the State of Games. I'm Dice Hate Me.
I'm Get Louder.
I'm Puppy Shogun.
And I'm Feld Fangirl.
And we are a podcast all about anything and everything related to board and card games. So welcome to episode 125, or as we like to call it, the one about the absolute essentials. So Daryl came up with the idea for this one, so any love slash hate mail should be addressed directly to him.
Yeah.
But if you want to hear other things, remember that you too can suggest a topic for the show by email or via Twitter by tweeting at the State of Games. Or email, of course, is thestateofgames@gmail.com.
Yeah, and if you don't submit topic ideas, I'm going to keep throwing softball pitches like this one. Next one is, what is your player color? Discussion for 3 hours.
It's actually not a bad one. Mine's blue and black. Discuss.
What do you do if someone takes your player out and player color? That's
I don't play.
The next.
I walk away.
Part two.
Part two. That's right. So basically this one, we'll get more into what this one's all about a little bit later, but it's pretty much us giving you our top threes that you need to have in your collection. And we'll get to more of that after we get to the meat of the podcast. But before we get into all that, has anyone been up to anything or played anything interesting since our last recording? By the way, just a little behind the green curtain for everybody. We're actually recording this a week after our PrezCon one, which was live, which if you haven't listened to, you should listen to because it was really good. It was a lot of fun. That was episode 124, the one about PrezCon 2017. But we're recording this one a little bit ahead of time because we've got two back-to-back conventions that everybody's going to be busy with. Well, not everybody, but most are going to be busy with. A PAX East and UnPub. So we're doing this about a week ahead of time so we can get it into the hopper.
Yeah, I still think we should record at UnPub. We do have a media room this year.
Yeah, that'd be fine with me.
I have about 15 minutes to do so. So let's
shut up, TC.
TC is far too busy for all that.
Far too busy. I will send in an assistant to help.
Okay. I'll start first because I'm first on the bullet list here. Brad Smoley came up this weekend to work on some UnPub building stuff for the convention. And so we played. I introduced him to Cold War, CIA versus KGB, which Kirkman introduced to me last week. And so we played one game of that, and I still like it.
Well, that's good.
And Brad was at the end was like, it's okay. So, but yeah, other than that, I've kind of been making notes on some new prototypes and stuff that I'm working on. But mainly my focus has been, as the reason for Brad's visit, has been focused on getting everything set and ordered for UnPub. So
why is it called UnPub Prime, by the way?
I was going to ask the same thing.
From PAX? Why can't we be our own thing and make it like UnPub Masterwork or something?
The board shot around a bunch of things. Like, we didn't like UnPub Expo. We didn't like UnPub Con because it just sounds weird.
UnPub Prima.
And so we're trying to find a different thing. And then finally we're just like, you know what? How about UnPub Prime? If anything, we could just do it this one because 7 is a prime number. So it's just this one until we figure out what we want to call it.
Yeah, because I guess UnPub 8 doesn't sound that great.
No. It's just that it's... we just kind of want to give it something so we don't have to do a logo every single time. So this way across the top, we could just do like the 8th annual UnPub blah. So the 8th annual UnPub Prime, the 7th annual UnPub Prime. And if we kept Prime, we would change the E in Prime to an 8, so it'd be UnPub Prime 8.
Oh, God.
That's pre-mate.
But also, there could be a very solid reason for the name change, and you aren't aware of that yet.
I don't care. I don't like it.
Really?
Change it.
TC, I heard TC's going to, I think he's thinking of boycotting UnPub.
That's fine. We have people on a waiting list for tables still. I actually have voicemails on my phone because people somehow got my freaking number, decided to call and see if they can get a table.
Oh, crap. I shouldn't have given that out.
If you'd like a table for UnPub, I hear there's like 3 left. Everyone, call Daryl.
I wish there was 3 left. I really, really do.
By the way, I
always like to have a couple extra empty ones just in case, and that is not the case going into this weekend.
By the way, I'm willing to donate my tag table for someone who wants to give me $150.
I think you get a taker, though.
I probably would.
You get a free table for giving Chris $150 or the finest bottle of whiskey you can find.
I like whiskey.
At least $150+ though.
There we are. We have to be really, really nice whiskey. Yeah. It's St. Paddy's Day, so you know, go forth and forage. You never know. All right, let's move on then. Wow. Since Daryl has
I'm next up.
Go, TC.
All right. So more importantly than Unpub Prime, TC played one game this last week. But I'll be at Unpub, so I've been working at all my protos. I played one game is Planetarium. You don't usually talk about GameSleuth games. Why do people keep signing with GameSleuth? Anyway, doesn't matter. So it was it's Planetarium.
Planetarium?
No, it's actually the whole thing. So it's just Planetarium. It's like straightforward. No joke. And the box is like, you know, just it looks like a galaxy and it says Planetarium on it. It actually looks, and I think it's trying to be somewhat educational. Like, I don't think, like, I get the feeling that it's an educational type game because it feels more like one of those games that you would see and buy at like the Air and Space Museum.
That's a cool box cover, though.
Well, I mean, it is what it is, right? I mean, it's not like flashy. Oh my God. It's just Planetarium by this guy. And I played it. I didn't really know what to think because whenever you open the box, you've got this, like, it looks like a solar system thing, but it's just lines everywhere in circles with standees for the planets. And there's four different planets, and you are actually like introducing life and different events to the planets, like billions of years of existence. And so the planet either has life or it doesn't. It has all these different things, and it can be in any of the concentric rings around in that solar system. So you're building a planetarium with four planets, and it creates a solar system. And at the end of the game, you have these cards that you can draw that will work towards end game scoring. So, like, I, for example, some of mine was I needed a planet with life that was within the habitable region. So, like, three or four rings away from the sun. And then there was other ones like I needed a cold planet that was lifeless. So it had to be in like the sixth or seventh ring from the sun. So kind of cool in that way. And we had, it was a pretty close game in the end. The points are kind of everywhere. I don't know how the points like on the cards actually, like they kind of make sense, but they also kind of don't. But somehow it all worked out and we kind of ended up with a similar amount of points, at least me and my friend Steve. And I had fun playing it. It amazed me because I didn't expect too much out of it. So it was pretty cool. And it's really fast. Probably played in like 20 minutes if we could, if we just had people know how to play. So
it's pretty impressive.
So it's something to try out if you're looking for something weird and interesting. Like
I almost backed this on Kickstarter when it was on there.
Maybe. I don't know. But
I think I remember seeing it. I mean, for some reason, I guess I just didn't star it or whatever. But now that it's out, star it. I get it. Planets, Planetarium. Anyway.
But it's kind of cool that you introduce these cool events, you know, like a meteor shower, right? And have to have the certain like gases and elements that create that thing. And you put it onto the planet. And then by building up the planet, either lifeless or with life, you affect what other people's goals are and whether they complete them. So kind of a little bit semi-cooperative in the most like little bit. So I kind of like it. I like it. Mainly we played after that. Since I didn't get to play it at PressCon, we played My Father's Work, my prototype for, and got to sit down and actually play like a bunch of like two rounds out of three, right? We were about to play the end, but we needed to go. So it's really cool. This is like my mad scientist game. It's kind of like Young Frankenstein, the board game. And so while for some reason it's kind of silly in the sense that like every single time you are a new generation of mad scientists and the townspeople kind of remember that you were bad, but they kind of also don't. So they just kind of like see you show up again. They're like, oh, that guy, I don't know about that guy. And you walk in, you're like, hey, everybody. And they're like, oh, maybe you'll be cool this time. And then you do creepy things. Runs you out of town.
Right? I cannot wait to play this game, by the way.
Yeah, well, it's cool. It's a basic like worker placement for people, but see, the worker placement spots change every generation depending on the decisions that everybody collectively makes. So the town either becomes more industrialized or not, or more occult or more creepy or whatever. So you could take your town into like a cool town that's like. I don't know, just like a nice little modern area, or it could be just this weird Transylvanian style town. So I kind of like that, and like that you're doing mad scientist experiments. So I'm only talking about it because I think after playing it a few times, it's definitely something I'm going to be pursuing to completion. And speaking about Unpub, this is the episode before Unpub, so I have to promote that it will be at Unpub.
Yay! So
play it, yeah.
Oh, I'll be playing. That's number one on my list, so save me a seat.
Well, and what's cool too is at least at Unpub, I'll have at least one scenario where you can, if you have your phone or if somebody has a phone, something, I'll have like a website that you can go to, and it kind of works like an app.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
What the heck is going on?
Is that why you were
on?
Texting us, asking us about our phones?
Maybe.
I didn't get a text asking me about my phone.
Maybe I was just trying to fish for your account information.
You already have my account information, so I guess
you don't want my account information.
So let me ask you really quickly then, since it's worker placement. So it could be my father's work, and then the tagline is not your father's worker placement. Right?
Colon,
of course.
There's worker placement. Right. Okay. Yeah, I guess it could. Moving on. Oh, I put this on here. I don't think I mentioned that I played Pandemic Rise of Cthulhu a few weeks back. I just didn't like it. Just flat out did not like it. As much as the Pandemic I kind of like, and I'm kind of sick of it at the same time. I think I've played out on Pandemic. I think I just can't do it anymore. And this didn't add in a new wrinkle that made me go, oh my god! It just kind of.
We played it over Christmas and it was pretty super easy, at least when Daryl and I played. But I liked the concept behind it. I mean, I'm not a big, huge Pandemic player either, but you know, I'm also a Cthulhu head, so I love.
Well, we had our first game.
I've heard people complain about it, like, oh, it's so easy or so this, and that's just the intro one. Like, it scales, so it's very difficult. So,
on that note of difficulty, like, our first game was the perfect storm to lose, right? We got none of those, the relics, the things that help you.
Right.
So, no one had any of them. And the game kept going, and we didn't get any more. And every single time something flipped over, it flipped another thing. So like I think we got around the table twice and lost.
Oh.
So it was really like, I know that on the high end, there could be a potential variance of like difficulty that just completely destroys you in that game. But that's same thing as Pandemic too. So, I mean, I don't know. I just did not like as much as there's just not for me, there's not enough new. There's just, it's kind of neat that you can get a card, but you still have to set up these weird, like, I have to give you this card to go do this thing. And then just, and the guys, the big miniatures, what are they? The bigger miniatures, the guys that.
Oh, the Chagos.
Chagos. Yeah. Yes. Chagos. I think every game, we got one turn where the Chagos did not move immediately into a gate, flipping over a new
god. Okay, you had
definitely
a perfect storm.
I just don't like that mechanic. I don't like just all of a sudden you don't get to do anything and you have to flip over two. Like, why not just say flip over two god cards? Because if I can't prevent it something like 90% of the time, then I don't really want to. Yeah. So I don't know. I really dislike those kinds of things where they're like, oh, you could potentially prevent this, but randomly you can't.
Oh.
Yeah. Hmm. So there should have been, and I kept looking in the rule book. I was like, man, that just seems unfair. You can't stop that. Maybe I'm reading this wrong, but no, Nothing I could find. Yeah, so I did not have a very good first impression of Pandemic Cthulhu Rising or whatever it is.
I think it's over for me. Dawn of Cthulhu, Cthulhu gets up for breakfast. I have no idea what that one's called.
I don't mean to be a down so much a downer, because I did like Planetarium and I did like my own game. But
I loved my own game.
But I love that
it's
game.
It's so choice. But,
yeah, this pandemic one.
It's so choice.
I'm not into the whole pandemic thingies. But maybe the Iberian one's kind of cool, but I probably won't play it.
It is, though. It's really cool.
Well, I think that's for others to say or not.
That's for other people to explore.
What'd you do, Jessica?
Well, Thursday night at my game night, we played Roll for the Galaxy. And it's one we played a bunch. But then after that, we decided to play Race for the Galaxy because a bunch of us had not played it. And so that was my first play of Race for the Galaxy.
Oh, I want to hear this.
It's kind of crazy to me that, I mean, I'm pretty comfortable with Roll. I've played it enough and I can get the iconography and I catch on pretty quick with Roll. But dang, it was hard for me to get a grasp on how to play the cards and get a hold of the iconography for Race for the Galaxy. And I really enjoyed the play, and I was really bad, but it's something I really want to play some more. But I had to ask questions every time and show these certain icons to figure out how to use these different, you know, abilities and bonuses and stuff. And I had such a hard time, like, keeping up with when people picked the action that they were going to do, and then you can follow the action. It was taking me so long to count my bonuses and make sure, like, especially when I'm grabbing cards, I could grab like 7 cards and keep 3. And I still had to count and remind myself. It was just like so much to keep track of, but I did like it. And what's interesting is that there was another player there who was playing Roll for the first, who had played Roll for the first time. And he had a hard time catching on to that. But then we played Race, and because he's a card game guy, he caught on really fast to that one. He actually won the game. So I think it's kind of cool, a contrast of how sometimes people catch on to the dice version quicker than the card version, and then vice versa.
Yeah, I'd much rather play Roll than Race, for definitely. Because,
yeah.
I mean, you know, Race, when it first came out, you know, we played it a bunch, and it was pretty, I wouldn't say revolutionary, but it was like, you know, felt pretty new, and a lot of new things happening in it. The, you know, the lead and follow mechanic, of course, had been adopted much, much earlier, but, you know, you played it for a while, and every time you played it, if you didn't play it, like, constantly, every time you broke it out, you have to get used to the icons again. It was just very convoluted, but
yeah.
Roll is so easy to play. And makes so much more sense, and it's just more fun with your dice and your dice pool. And Jump Drive is super fast, and I like playing it a lot. And it's super.
Yeah, I wish I'd gotten to play it with you guys. But
yeah, you totally should check it out. It's just obviously it's much more luck oriented, and it goes so fast that you can just play it in 15 minutes and you're done. You just well play again, you know. So I recommend it, and it's super cheap.
Well, like, I can't buy it, so.
Maybe someone will give it to you sometime.
But I just thought the contrast, it was cool how this guy, he couldn't get a handle of the dice, but could get the cards, and then I was the opposite. I just thought that was really interesting. So after that, a bunch of us played Daryl's favorite game, London. Daryl changed in the show notes, changed the word London to Lundum.
Because it is.
So, no, it's not.
Hey, let's play fine. London. I have a better idea. Let's just sit with our nose in a corner for 2 hours because you're going to feel just as punished.
Why? I still, like, can you remind me again why you like don't like this game so much?
It's just, it's obnoxious. Like, okay, Agricola, it still kind of has the title for the most punishing game. Like, you will get more stressed out playing Agricola than most anything else.
You know what I think is the most punishing? This punny title you gave it. There, take that. Like,
Sorry, I'm going through a tunnel. I can't hear you.
Your whole computer and Skype is going through a tunnel. Okay.
Well, I don't think the game is all that punishing.
I felt robbed afterward, like personally robbed.
How'd you get robbed?
The game just takes all joy from you and then pees on it.
Okay.
Lots of rats.
Have you met Martin Wallace? Not met him personally, but have you met his designs? I mean,
no, Steam is not punishing. I enjoy Steam. And actually, that's probably the only game he's made that I like.
Yeah, I'm not a big Martin Wallace fan myself. I mean, I think his designs are fine. They're just not for me. London itself was probably one of the more palatable ones for me, because I like the engine building that happens in London.
Yeah.
The rats freaking suck. Let's just be honest. They do. They do. The whole black cubes thing, it sucks.
The poverty. Okay. Yeah. But if you manage it, you just have to have less than somebody else. It's not like you have to have none. You just have to keep track of what other people have.
Okay, I can't believe I'm about to say what I'm about to say.
Wait, no, you're not. No. Go ahead.
Thank you. Shut up.
I was going to agree with you, by the way, but anyway.
Bring it to Unpub.
Oh, my God.
I will try it again, but... Oh God.
Did you explode?
I'm trying to hold back the just vomit that wants to come out.
Can we play Zulkin too?
You want to see table Zulkin. Here's the thing. Here's the thing in London. I will give it one more shot because John Moeller taught it to me. I love John, but he's also notorious for teaching games wrong. So I'll give it one more shot, but...
So what I was going to say, though, really quickly, and we've talked about this on previous podcasts, but it's worth mentioning, is London and its similar designs, not similar, but as far as like the negative points and things like that, it feeds into player mentality, and there's only going to be a certain amount of people who really want to deal with that. And like TC has had tons of articles on his designer ego about positive player interaction and things like that. London is almost the antithesis in some of the Martin Wallace designs, at least the feeding mechanic is the antithesis of that, because it is a negative, because you're constantly trying to fight off negative points. And some people don't like that. It actually makes people feel really horrible. It makes them feel like life. You know what I'm saying? So,
well, the easiest way to make a game feel heavy, I think I don't know. The easiest way to make a game feel heavy is just add a few negative points in.
Yeah.
Because people have loss aversion like crazy. So, loans are the big Martin Wallace thing. And that happens in like Steam and stuff. But like, they don't get too far out of hand. There's other game designers that where it gets worse. Like, Le Havre is an example of one where you can really, really put yourself down into the hole. And I mean, it's great, but like, it makes the game needlessly heavy in some cases, right? So it's kind of this easy way to make things heavy, but I always recommend it for like a small card game, because usually those are really easy. And if you just throw in like, oh, don't do this thing, then people will be like, oh my God, there's a decision. And
well, like the negative eggs and eggs and empires and stuff like that, you know, you're going to have
like that.
I agree. So that's a whole conversation that we've had in the past, but we probably should have again, because it's very fascinating about game design. We probably will have a game design centric episode coming up here pretty soon, because we're all going to be in that mindset from Unpub.
Probably.
Yeah.
Well, you guys.
You will too. You'll have a game design by the time you're done with Unpub.
Never. Somebody just changed the show notes and drew the guy flipping the table after the word Lundum. I wondered who that was.
So you played solo Terraforming Mars too?
Yes. So
I played it before.
No, I've been trying for months to play Terraforming Mars solo, and so this week it was my goal to actually finally play it solo. So I played some games with some friends, I think, Wednesday night. And then that night I got home and I just stayed up super late. No, it must have been Friday night. I stayed up super late Friday night and played a game solo in my room. And it's great solo. It's interesting because with the solo variant, you have to play with the advanced cards. And so you play with those cards and you start at 14 on the game board instead of 20. So in subsequent rounds, your income is even lower than in a regular game, and you only have 14 rounds in order to raise the oxygen all the way up, the temperature all the way up, and then place all of the aquifers, all the oceans. So I started, I went through like the first five rounds, and I'm just like, this is never going to happen. I'm never going to get anywhere with this. And so it was a very apparent that I had to use the standard projects a lot to, especially to get the oceans out. I didn't get one card drawn that would let me put an ocean out. So I had to keep paying $18 every time to put these oceans out. And by like 12 or 13, like probably around 12, I was like, I still feel like I'm not even going to get close. But then around 13 and 14, I was like, maybe I can, but I was just shy. I had like 3% more to go with the oxygen to actually win. And so with the solo game, you don't care as much about putting cities out because those just give you end game points if there is greenery around them. But so I was just trying to at least get all the parameters maxed out so I could at least win, because then otherwise your score doesn't matter. So, but I lost, but it was still so much fun. And I was actually, I set it up and had it ready to possibly play the next morning before I had to be somewhere, but I didn't have enough time. But I can't wait to play this game with more of the other corporations. My goal is to win a solo game with every corporation in the box, and we'll see if that ever happens. But it's a part of my 10x10 challenge, so I have to play it solo 10 times at least this year. So
yeah, you're forced to.
You just don't have that many
what?
She just doesn't have that many friends.
I have tons of friends, but I like playing solo as well.
This is why Daryl does not play his solo games correctly. He makes fun of people for not having friends.
That's why I don't play my solo games correctly.
you don't understand what it is to be a solo gamer.
I play solo
games. He's a poser. He's a solo poser.
Yeah, there we go.
A poser.
I have a bunch of games on my iPhone I play by myself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great.
Sounds like all these video games are solo games.
Right.
Yep.
I play lots of apps solo. Anyway, all right. So, yes, me. On to me. What have I been up to? Oh, my gosh, so much. Not really. But I played Gloomhaven more. I played, by the way, if you haven't heard, I don't remember what episode it is, but it's one of the recent Geek All-Stars. We recap our first play of Gloomhaven and our impressions of it. But yesterday we had all day Sunday, so Dan and Chris Mosley and myself played three scenarios of Gloomhaven.
Mm.
Yes. So we were able to...
And it gets better and better?
It's really good.
Okay.
I can't deny... I mean, here's the thing, too. Okay. You guys are going to appreciate this, but some people out there have not seen Gloomhaven yet. The fact... Oh, I don't know how in the world they were able to do this game. And because the box is so ginormous, there's 96 scenarios in the book. The game itself is like, how would you ever balance the game to be balanced for that many scenarios? You'd never be able to play test it. Does the system hold up to it? I don't know how, but it does. Granted, we've only just scratched the surface of it, but with 13 different characters, playable characters you could get during the game, plus all this, if you bought Gloomhaven and you like campaign-based games, it's the only game you'd ever have to play the rest of your life. It's like
96.
That. For 96 parts of your life until Gloomhaven 2 comes out or whatever. And then by the time you're 50, you might be able to play Gloomhaven 2. The system is super cool. I love the decisions that happen in the game itself. The timer, the self-timer that happens with playing cards. Because every turn, you're playing two cards from your hand. And you have to activate the top portion of one card and the bottom portion of another card. And you can also take basic actions based on those as well, but usually you're going to take the more beneficial actions unless you get blocked or you can't do something. But most of it's like, you know, moving or using, you know, a special attack or things like that. You can, of course, with any campaign-based scenario, you can buy upgrades for or more weapons or armor or special abilities, things like that. We played enough that Dan and I were able to go to level 2 with our characters, which enabled us to put to check off what are known as perks. So they're little upgradable portions for the characters, and they just the way the characters play and their available perks and the way they work is just super cool. Now, I'm the scoundrel, so all I do basically, I mean, I can get some really cool attacks coming out, but mostly I go around and ping at people and either backstab them, but I go around and steal everybody's gold. That's pretty much what I do. So I have gained, like, in four or five scenarios, like, over 100 and some gold pieces, which is just nuts. I bought so much kit. I'm loaded to the brim with stuff. It's amazing. I'm having a ball playing this game.
But it's probably how they balance it, just, like, give you a limit.
It is. Well, also, it's a little bit balanced, too, because I've found that my at the beginning of each scenario, you get two gold cards. And basically, there are two kind of self missions that you do during the game. Like, one of them actually benefited me, which is hoard, which is get five or more gold coins during the scenario. I'm like, piece of cake, because that's what I do. But most of the other ones, I had a hard time kind of getting, whereas Dan and Chris were getting more the check marks, but I was also maxing out my experience points I was getting during the things for using, like, special abilities and trying different things. So it balanced all out, because I was able to buy more specialty equipment versus Dan or Chris. They had specialties that were coming out in different ways. So it's really cool. Again, I don't want to go too much into depth about it, other than the fact that it was fun to be able to play three different ones linked, you know, and we're able to make choices during the game as well. We uncover missions or things that people ask us to do, or side quests. And just the amount of world that's in this box. I don't know how Isaac Childress, the designer, did all of this. He's insane. And the one thing that I think is the most insane, so the board for glue, there's no, you just play regularly, but you have tiles you lay out, of course, depending on the scenario. But there's also a giant board that is the world surrounding Gloomhaven. And as you unlock certain things, you take stickers off and put them on that board, legacy style, so you know that you can go to that place, and then you check them off, or you mark the prosperity level of the city and all these different things. The bowl is a quadfold board, and one of the things we uncovered, we were supposed to put on the board at a certain place, and Chris went to peel the sticker off, and it was actually cut. So the sticker was almost split in two, and we're like, oh, man, that must have been a production error. And we're like thinking, well, that's you know, a shame, because most everything we've seen, we've only come across maybe one or two typos in the whole thing, which is pretty impressive. But we're like, oh, that's a shame that happened. But the thing is that when we started to put the sticker on, we realized that it was cut because the sticker is supposed to sit on the crease of the board. And I'm like, are you freaking kidding me?
Was there really no way they could have, like, moved it just a little bit so it wouldn't sit on the crease?
They could,
it's awesome.
The fact is, that's awesome. It's crazy, but it's awesome. So that's the level of detail that goes into Gloomhaven. So it deserves the accolades. I think it's a really, really fun and interesting game. Again, I don't play a lot of those I played a lot, but I don't regularly play a lot of campaign-based games, but I'm actually looking forward to, like, you know, when I role-play and get a good role-playing group, of playing Gloomhaven more and more and developing these characters. So that's a huge testament to it. So I'd recommend you check it out. Yeah. So I also play Broom Service. TC, I know you've played Broom Service.
Mm-hmm.
Daryl, have you played it?
I have not.
And Jessica, have you played it?
Yes, I have.
Okay. So Daryl, I'm going to tell you right now, you're probably going to have the same reaction I did. You're going to want to flip the table the first time you play Broom Service. Let me tell you.
Bravery and stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Why would you pick that? What are you doing?
Oh, my God.
You don't even need that.
Exactly. There was a portion. Lillian and I played it two-player. It was the first time I'd played it, and I broke it out. She'd played it before. And so she kind of knew what to expect, but I didn't. And there was one point where she just, it was like four rounds in or something like that. And I was already, my face was red. I was like, and then she kind of laughed and goes, what did I do that for? I don't know what I did that for. And it was like, she couldn't even use the card. She had it in her hand. And I was like, I'm the brave whatever. Cause I was like, oh, sure. I can pull this off. There's no reason she would need it. And she was like, I'm really sorry. And she's like, no, I'm the brave. And I'm like, ah. And so I had to literally walk away from the table for like 5 minutes to cool down. It is to be so.
So was it kind of like Ken Grazier last year at Unpub, kind of like picking on you just because it was something they could do?
No. She didn't mean to do that. She actually meant to choose another card, but as an accident, you're like, why did you even choose that? And she's like, I don't know. And so finally, but I calmed down, and it was about halfway through the game, and I came back and I said, all right, I'm going to refocus. I'm going to calm down. I'm going to refocus and figure this game out. And so I started to get a little bit more of the ebb and flow of it, not calling brave so much, trying to just make what I do with cowardly, unless I absolutely need to press my luck for a brave thing. And it felt better, but it's still, you're going to have certain rounds where you are going to be completely stymied. And the thing is, you only choose four cards during the round, and so sometimes you want to play a card to piggyback to be able to do a card later. And if you get stymied from doing that card, you're screwed. And you're like I was never able. I was able to take one cloud once with the Weather Fairy, only once, and I played the Weather Fairy like five times. It was ridiculous. I don't know how anybody plays this game with more than two players, by the way.
That's great. Yeah. I love it.
Now you got to try the card game.
Oh, the original card game? Yeah.
Well, no, they made a Broom Service card game.
They have a new one.
They have a new one. So this was based on the original card game, expanded into Broom Service, and now they've gone back and made a card game again out of Broom Service?
Well, no, because it was Witch's Brew, right? And then they made a board game, and then now they have Broom Service.
That's what
card
I'm saying.
Game.
Yeah. So, yeah, okay. That makes a ton of sense. yeah, but I will
money.
Say... Money. It's all about money. I will say it's a fascinating game. The choices you're making in the game are fascinating, but it will incense many people. I could imagine, literally, Daryl, you playing this game, you will want to punch somebody in the face. At least once or twice during the game.
I don't understand what you're talking about.
Full of crap. You're totally full of crap. And the only other thing I'll just mention, because I want to give a little shout out to them, because they've always been awesome, but I finally ordered a Quiver. I've talked to them several times on Twitter, and of course I support their product because it's super cool and everybody has one. And I was like thinking, you know, I want to go to PAX East, but I don't want to be carrying these boxes and things around everywhere because I'm going to have some prototype stuff and some other games I just want to get on the table. And I was like, I'm just going to pull the trigger. I ordered a Quiver. It's going to be here tomorrow, and I'm going to kit it out and upgrade it and get everything ready for PAX East. So if you haven't seen Quiver, go to Quiver. I think it's quivertime.com, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
And you can also purchase it directly on Amazon. That's their main fulfillment. I own two Quivers, and I absolutely love them, and I don't know how. I mean, traveling to conventions is super easy, and you can be incredibly inventive with it, like Josh Mills was.
Yeah, that was perfect.
By the way, Josh Mills' packaging there was Quiver approved.
Yep, they liked it on Twitter. They loved it. And if you missed that, you can go to Joshua J. Mills on Twitter and check out his feed, but we'll summarize for you. It was after we went to the liquor store, and he got some portable things, and he basically outkitted his Quiver into a little cocktail, a martini bar. Yes, yeah. It was amazing. Yeah.
It was a Quiver speakeasy.
It was. It was amazing.
And I was like, what is this, the prohibition? You're like sneaking this alcohol in here in the Quiver. So using a Quiver, can you only store like cards in there?
I mean, it's made for cards, but you can, like Daryl said, you can get creative.
Like small bits, I guess you could put in there.
Yeah, small bits and stuff too.
I store, when I travel, I carry Bottom of the Ninth in mind, the board, everything fits in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the same with Y First. Yeah, smaller games.
Yeah, I'll be putting Bottom of the Ninth and some of the Dice Hate Me Games card games in there to carry with me, along with like the Isle of Trains prototype and stuff like that. So. Yeah, I mean, you can fit a lot in those things. So it's going to make traveling to and from the con much easier.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, it does that.
Well, you know what? We have wrapped up what we have been doing this week, so let's move on to the meat of the podcast. Like we mentioned, Daryl suggested this topic, so if you hate it or love it, let him know, but especially if you hate it, let him know, not us. So this is what Daryl wrote. He wrote these notes, so bear with us. And this has been, three episodes ago he wrote these, so we saved it till now. Yeah. So people over probably the history of time have always...
People over probably the history of time.
Hey, Daryl, why don't you do these notes then? Why don't you introduce what we're doing?
Okay. I'll do my southern one. People over the probably history of time. I wrote this note, so bear with me. They've always stated essentials of everything. So music you must have on your shelf, like Pearl Jam's 10 album, at least one ABBA album. books that you must own, like Devil in the White City, It, Letters from Earth. And today we're going to kind of go with that same vein, and we're going to discuss board games that we feel every board game collector, kind of sure player, must own on their shelves. And I know in the past we've discussed games that you could take with you on a secluded island, like the one about the last game on Earth, which is episode 11. But this one's a little bit different. So this is going to be each of us giving three games that we feel that you should own and why you should own it. This may get a little bit heated. Sure, probably stir a little bit of controversy. I don't think so. But at any rate, rather than continue the explanation of a pretty easily explained topic, let's just dive right in. First of all, the only rule going into this is that Dice Hate Me Games and Isfahan are off limits because they're far too obvious and everyone already owns them anyway.
Or should own them anyway. Yes. So, yes, you can't list Isfahan because, let's be honest, we'd all have Isfahan on our list. And the Dice Hate Me Games stuff is great because I would have put a couple on my list because I love them. But anyway.
Viva Java Dice.
My Father's Work, 1, 2, and 3. I haven't even played My Father's Work.
Underground.
Yet. Underground.
I just cut all that out and just say a framed picture.
Rolls, Election.
And that's it.
So, Club Zen.
Club Zen.
Don't Club Zen. It.
Hey. Oh.
What's wrong?
He's laughing a little too hard.
I know. Yeah,
seriously. My goodness. Hey, I have my copy of Club Zen and Don't Get Eaten right here. I can see them from where I'm sitting.
But they're out.
Yeah.
For now.
For now.
For now. Yeah.
All right, so Daryl, you chose the list, so why don't you give us, do you want to go your 1, 2, 3 or 3, 2, 1, or how do you want to do this? This is your podcast, man.
Let's just go 1, 1, 1, 2, 2, 2, 3, 2, 3.
Okay.
Unlike most or any other podcast where I tried playing devil's advocate, I wasn't very safe this time.
Well, okay, just a little bit of a backstory on this. You originally named it the one about eclectic essentials.
I did.
We were like, that sounded pretty interesting, but your choices, we all discussed and laughed at and scoffed behind your back, were not eclectic at all. So we decided to go with the one about absolute essentials because it's going to include some more mainstream or more obvious titles, so to speak. But there are going to be some people out there that are going to disagree.
The tunnel's back.
But anyway, so why don't you start with your number one then? And then we'll go around the room.
All right, my number one is Puerto Rico, preferably the 10th anniversary if you can get your hands on it. It's hands down, it's probably one of the most fluid and well balanced games I have ever played. It's proof that you can have a heavier weight euro and not have the constant downtime between turns. Everything's shared. There's really no time to grab your phone and update this or take pictures of that and all that. And that's what I really like. It's just sit down, play through it, and then it's done. And it's done faster than it looks like it's going to be. And
I don't know what game you're playing, dude, but that's not the game I'm playing.
Oh no, I love Puerto Rico. I mean, hell, the turn order, the way the turns are handled for Puerto Rico was the inspiration of how the turns are handled for Compounded. So that was like one thing I lifted from that. So
I'm not disagreeing with you having it on your choice because I do think that Puerto Rico is a classic, but there are other games that I would rather play or have in my collection of Puerto Rico's weight. However, I would say you're right. And the lead follow mechanic was great and it's still great. And when it's used in other games, it's a good way to give people something to do when it's not their turn.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with that.
It just keeps you engaged and interested in what's going on, or it should. If it doesn't, you've just got a really crappy game group.
Well, that is a possibility. How does everyone else feel about that choice? Puerto Rico, would you consider that as an absolute essential in your collection?
I always have to, when I do these lists, I always have to cross it off because Puerto Rico is just assumed as my number one choice for most anything.
Right, of course, yeah.
And then I just kind of go, okay, well, I'm going to assume Puerto Rico is number one, but here's the rest of my list. So I agree heavily.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a good choice.
I think it's a solid choice. It would not be on my list for absolute essentials, but I do believe that since there's four of us, that it should belong there because it is one of the most classic of its kind and introduced mechanics that still in many ways have not been bested. Right. Especially the lead follow. Myself, I enjoy playing things like San Juan, and of course we mentioned Race for the Galaxy and Roll for the Galaxy, the lead follow mechanic in that probably wouldn't exist without Stone Age, and I mean Puerto Rico, Stone Age, my God, Puerto Rico. So I'm glad that it introduced those types of things. All right, so this will maybe not be so controversial until TC starts making fun of our list, like mine and Jessica's list, which he surely will.
I will say, because you brought up San Juan, if you haven't played Puerto Rico, play San Juan first because it actually does a good job of teaching Puerto Rico.
It does. Yeah. The core mechanics of Puerto Rico, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The role selection.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, fine. All right, so Jessica, so that we can get into the ridicule portion of the podcast from TC.
Well, okay, so I put this here for the eclectic part. But I'm like, it's one of my favorite games, and who doesn't love an awesome pressure luck game that just gets hilariously funny sometimes? So one of my choices is Can't Stop. And when we played this at PressCon, it was so funny because one guy, after like seven rounds, did not have one cone on the board because he kept pushing his luck so hard. It was hilarious. I was like, he would roll and finally put some, you know, of the temporary ones out there. And then he'd go roll again. But because his luck was so bad, I was like, are you sure you want to do that? He'd roll and then he'd bust. And it's just like, it was hilarious. So I love this game, the constant pushing your luck and the tension. And then there's like different variants you can play where if you end up landing on top of somebody, the force play, you have to keep rolling until you go past them, or the jumping where you can actually jump over people. So I think it's so much fun, just typical, just pressure luck and just fun. And I don't even have a hard copy at home, but I need to. I have to get one next year.
Who was it that we played that was doing that?
Huh?
I played Can't Stop with you, I think. No. I mean, I played it there. No? Oh. Mm-hmm. That's right. You had other people that you were hanging out with. Not us.
She was usually playing Terraforming Mars.
Yeah, that's right.
I keep seeing that. There's like a Japanese map someone keeps saying. Like, they have like this Can't Stop version that's just like a roll-up, like, scroll kind of thing, and like you just play it on that, and it has like the little Agricola pieces, and it looks really slick.
That sounds awesome.
Oh.
Yeah, it looks really slick. If you see on Twitter, there's like pictures of it, and I saw that like there's Can't Stop Express on the on Kickstarter with Hugo Griffin, and I thought that's what that was. I thought they were just like reprinting Can't Stop, but like in a really quick, easy version. But it is not. It's not that. Like, I was kind of disappointed because I saw those cool little like roll up scroll versions, and I was like, oh, that's nope, I guess that's not it. So, yeah, if I can find one of those, I would definitely have one of those in my collection. Because, yeah, breaking out Can't Stop just pretty much like at a bar would be great. But having that whole big like stop sign and all the
that's
the only downside.
Yeah, the version that I have, I love Can't Stop, and I think that I'm going to agree with you, Jessica. I think that everybody should probably have this in their collection, especially as the quintessential pressure luck game. It is.
Well, I think they need a bar version, and I'm going to tell Eagle Griffin on this podcast right now that if you make a bar version that's based off of that, like that side version someone's made, like you're going to make a lot of money on Kickstarter. You should just do that instead of the Express.
I agree. I'll agree with that.
It will come.
That's right. If you build it, they will come. Because the Can't Stop version I have is probably the one that a lot of people have, and it's that big plastic stop sign, and even the size of the box is so weird.
It's huge.
It's huge.
Yeah.
You don't need to have it that big.
Yeah, and you can just take it to a bar if you had something like little that you can like, you know, like a little canvas, like almost like a mouse pad or whatever.
You know what?
You could even have a folding plastic thing with hinges, I would think.
You know
right?
what? It should probably it should probably fit into a quiver. I'm just saying that, you know. People are going to think the quiver is giving us money for this podcast, but they're not. They're not.
They should be.
This podcast is brought to you by Quiver.
On the box.
Oh, yeah. Every game should have fits in a quiver on the side of the box.
That's a great idea, actually.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Hey, Quiver, give me a little call. I got some marketing tie-ins for you. All right. So Can't Stop. I'm not going to argue against Can't Stop. I think it's fantastic.
It's okay.
It's just fine. Well, TC, we see your list. Which version of Pentago do you want to talk about first?
Fantago, Fantago, Fantago. No, that's just a little joke. Okay, so here's my problem. Right, before we get, like, because I'm going to have to go down a list of three. Am I supposed to do the most essential titles? Is this literally the most essential? Because okay. I will give you my three most essential, but I feel like that is, like, really... Yes, I mean, it is, but at the same time, would I...
I'm going to say that basically that by the time you get through with our list, you will have a list of 12 titles that you absolutely should have in your collection. But they can't be the only 12 you have in your collection. Because there's many, many more that we could list. And what we talked about, we've done Desert Island ones. We've done the Last Game on Earth, which, by the way, spoilers, was Stone Age. So, you know, it's like it's not the end all be all the last three that you could ever play.
Yeah, I know. I'm just like thinking like most essential like games you should have in your collection, and
there's a lot. I know there's a lot.
Let me just put out here that because I'm typically mocked for this. I love how you just brought this up now, TC, and questioning this now as opposed to before we started recording.
I wanted to talk about it on air, honestly. Because I made two separate lists, and so before I started my list, I wanted to say, hey, what do you guys think about this subject? What makes a most essential title? Because if I'm going to give you the most essential titles, I have my three, and I think they're pretty darn solid. But that is also going to be very... There will also be very hard to really frame a conversation around.
Oh, this is all fascinating. Right. Okay, so here's the thing. Right, this is what we'll do. Wait, I'm going to make a little small concession here. Give the one that you think you want to give on air now, and then we will very briefly talk about the other one at the end of the podcast, and Jessica can put it in as part of the bloopers.
Okay, you hear that, Jessica? TC wasn't prepared enough, so you have to do more work.
I am overprepared. I got two lists.
He's overprepared. That's right.
All right, so anyway, so here's my top one. Number one, Ticket to Ride.
I'm not going to argue with that. I considered it myself.
It is a standby for everybody. It's a fantastic game. It gets you into the idea of, well, I mean, there is one little thing wrinkle, and that's you do have to draw a lot of cards, but everybody likes to hold a lot of cards, especially if they're like the same thing. And so it's easy to hold them. So like holding like 30 cards in my hand is super fun and Ticket to Ride, but you just kind of, you got that always nagging feeling in the back of your mind that someone's going to take the route that you desperately need. So you need to balance whether you're not going to, you're going to throw out cards at a certain point to just take that specific route that you need. I think that tension makes the game awesome. And the fact that after playing it so many times, I can play this game in like 45 minutes and just bust it out. And you can also play the really mean variant, which we haven't really, which I guess I shouldn't even play with Daryl. Like, yeah, really mean variant where you look at the person's, you choose the cards for the person to the left, I think, or right. So you know exactly what they're going for and you know that they're not good. And you know that like you can block them. That is horrible.
Why? We played that version because TC was like, hey, I got a different variant we can play. And it's true. But
here's the thing. You knew up ahead of time. The person to your left knows exactly what you have. Like, don't go for that. Go draw some new cards or something.
And you're still true. Like, I wanted to flip the table in the worst way.
So funny. But anyways,
spinning in his little invite-only convention over that stupid variant.
There you go. So Ticket to Ride, solid. I win.
Look at me, guys.
All right, so here's one that I'm going to mention that nobody better ridicule, because this is one of the most elegant designs of all time, and that is No Thanks. No Thanks is the perfect bar game.
Yep.
Absolutely. Hands down. Take it with you everywhere you go. I keep it in my car. It's in my car. So whenever I go somewhere and we're like thinking, oh, we might go to a bar, we're going to take it out. Unfortunately, the only drawback to No Thanks is that you have to have three or more players to play it. But the design, No Thanks is one of those designs that you just want to kick yourself that you didn't come up with, because it is so good. And I mean, it's just, it should be in every person's collection. If you're going to choose one small box card game, other than all the Dice Hate Me Game Rabbits line, obviously, you want to choose No Thanks, because
in Colorado.
Well, Colorado's great too. It is. Colorado is fantastic. But No Thanks is just one of those that when all you have is cars and chips and that's it. And you are literally like looking at people, and it has a social aspect to it too, because you're just like, you're going to take that card with that many chips on it? Come on, please. You know, so you're trying to talk people into either getting a bad deal or pressing their luck. You're like, oh, you could totally make that run, dude. You only need one more card, you know? And it's like, it's just so fun. And you can play it, especially if you know the rules outright. The only drawback, there's one. Okay, one drawback is, of course, it doesn't play two player. One other drawback to No Thanks is that it usually takes new players one play to get it. Because inevitably, there's always one person that goes, oh, I got this game figured out. I'm just going to take every card that comes up.
Yeah. And you're like, that's the only downside. That's the only downside to this game is the player that decides to ruin the game.
But they
if one person decides they can't win and they ruin it for everybody else, they ruin it for everyone else, and you either play it again or stop playing.
Well, you tell that person to go home is what you tell that person to do.
Seriously, you go off and play something else. You're not invited.
You're not welcome.
We're all here trying to win.
You're saying this, and I'm immediately just thinking in my head, yeah, I've played games with Scott King. I love Scott, but that's what he does. Like he's always the bad guy in the game, even in a co-op. He's got to be the bad guy. Just I don't know why. Like I still get infuriated thinking about the time we played Belle of the Ball together.
Oh yeah.
No, he wants to see where the spam strategy is, right? Like, and if he can find that one thing that he can do over and over again and pull off the win, then he'll do it. So it's like, yeah, you don't want people that want to spam when you play No Thanks. But I really like No Thanks, even with that
caveat.
With that caveat that everybody should try to win, because if you just don't, then it's just no fun.
No Thanks.
Yeah.
No Thanks.
Games are good when you try to win them, because otherwise, what's the point?
Exactly.
Pretty much. All right, Daryl, what's your second one?
My second one, this is going to be dripping with controversy.
This is so, yeah.
Yeah. It's got to go to Stone Age.
That is the most obvious. This is, I'm going to pull out my high fidelity moment here. I'm going to be like, wow, why don't you just choose the Beatles White Album or something?
I like these essentials because everybody gets to pick their most stereotypical game picks ever. It's great.
Okay, another behind the curtain. I wrote this
and then we make fun of you for it.
Right.
I know, no matter what. I pick controversial ones, I get made fun of. I pick safe ones, I get made fun of. I can't pick anything.
Oh.
And you guys are just
so great.
You're just.
I have not made fun of you, Daryl.
I think this is a wonderful pick, but I don't think your caveat of best worker placement game is true.
I think.
I think it's a great game.
Stone Age is probably one of the best worker placement games ever made.
It's a little outdated, but it's good.
Okay, if it wasn't for Stone Age. Much like Puerto Rico, if it wasn't for Stone Age, there wouldn't be a much solid worker placement around as there is now.
Well, so if there wasn't Halos, then there wouldn't be Stone Age.
So essentially, this is Daryl's pick from 10 years ago, basically. His entire list is what we would have probably talked about on the State of Games 10 years ago. Which...
Oh, my God!
Oh,
we love
great.
You, man. We're just, you know, we wouldn't tease.
I feel the legs of a table coming off.
The table has flipped through the microphone. I agree with Daryl. Come on.
You can't not have Stone Age in your collection, please.
It's impossible not to make fun of anyone on this list either, too. So, great.
I will also throw in that you must also have the expansion.
Well, I don't have the expansion, and I still like playing Stone Age, but I do like the expansion.
That expansion is crazy good and very underrated. Granted, thankfully, when Z-Man acquired Stone Age, they dropped the whole style is the goal or whatever the hell that terrible name was.
God, yeah, I know.
They just call it the Stone Age expansion, but it's a must. It's a must. You must have it.
I must. All right. Well, I agree with it. Well, like I said, episode 11 is all about the last game on Earth, and we debated. Sherilyn and I debated it constantly. Like, if you had you had to go into an emergency shelter, it could only take one game. Stone Age 1. And it won because not only could you do all kinds of different things, and it's still fun to play, but you could also make plenty of other games out of the components from Stone Age, which is part of one of the things that we mentioned too, which was fun. So that's a fun little episode. You should all go and go into the Wayback Machine and check out episode 11.
No.
Yeah.
Shut up. Rude. All right, Jessica, what's your number two?
So you could just do what this game does with a deck of cards, but I love that it adds a twist and some extra things you need to think about. And I love trick taking, so I feel like everybody should have at least like one trick taker in their collection. And so this game is Diamonds. So it's typical trick taking, but it's cool that when you get to do something different when you play off suit and you're trying to collect points that way. So I love how you have to think about that aspect of the game in addition to just the typical trick taking part. So Diamonds has to be in your collection.
So it absolutely has to be.
I think so.
Okay. So I do agree that you can play it with a deck of cards. I love Diamonds. I think that of the whole new trick-taking genre, other than, let me say, trick-taking, the trick-taking game from Dice Haven Games, has done a great job with the trick-taking genre. Daryl, shut up. And in fact, that you can do it with a deck of cards is fine, but the packaging and the way that they've done it is actually one of the more attractive from Stronghold Games. And also, it's Mike Fitzgerald, which we love. So it's like, you know, he just took a concept, again, with the trick-taking genre, but made it gamerly, which I really like. Mm-hmm. I love Hearts and Spades and things like that as well. So I'm behind this pick. I think that's probably an essential. If you're going to have a trick-taking game in your collection, it probably should be something like, or Diamonds. I don't know, TC, what do you think?
Skull King's actually my favorite, but it's not as accessible.
Yeah. Diamonds is one that you can teach to someone. If you've ever said to someone, have you played Hearts or Spades, and they say yes, you can sit down and play Diamonds in 5 minutes and they get it, you know. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why you want to have these essentials in your library, is the fact that they are accessible and they can be taught to someone that introduces a new core concept to something. Just like with TC mentioned, Ticket to Ride, that's a gateway game, obviously, for a lot of different people, but it's still playable by people who played tons of other games, and they can still have fun playing Ticket to Ride with people who are new. Same thing with Diamonds.
I forgot that my microphone was off. I kept commenting over top.
Oh, where y'all?
Like, why is everyone talking over me? Jeez.
Well, TC, why don't you condense what you were saying?
I was saying first, I mean, if you like Diamonds, you should probably Spires by TC Petty III.
Absolutely. There you go.
I have to take a small disagreement on this one, because as much as I do like Diamonds, I just can't see it as something that defines like a collection. I don't think of it like, I don't put Diamonds as my number one pick for a trick taking card game.
Okay, what would be your number one pick other than the traditionals,
or a short card game too? So it's like, but I don't know. I like the fact that you're injecting something new here, because for me, this perspective comes from like I don't know, just like going through phases of things, like really liking these like trick taking games and then hating them.
Well, I haven't played too many. I mean, I've only been gaming for a couple of years now.
So, but
I just love the trick-taking mechanic, and I happen to love this game. So,
well, I'm interested, though, TC, like, what other trick-taking games that you've played might you think that you would have in your collection other than Diamonds if we said you had to have a trick-taking game in your collection?
Well, I don't know. I'm just trying to think of like other things that like go in that same category, right? Like, it's not necessarily that it's the specific trick taking portion, but
a smaller card game that is closer to a traditional game.
Yeah. I mean, I already yelled out Coloretto too, because I really like Coloretto.
Oh, see, I've never played that.
Oh, yeah, you'd like
it's
Coloretto.
It's really good and simple. Like, it's like another one of those, like, no thanks. It's just such a good bar kind of game. And so devious and simple and, yeah, I think what puts Diamonds down for me a little bit is the fact that it is Even though it's simple, it's not as simple as some of the other ones, and they bring out some of the qualities that I like a little better. I mean, even some of the climbing games, like I don't like Teechu anymore, but I know that people love Teechu and Haggis.
Teechu and Haggis version. Have a huge following. I don't like them. I don't like them. No, that's just me. That's my personal. I don't think that they're bad games. I just don't like climbing games.
I like Haggis. I do.
I just can't stand Haggis with the bombs and all that stuff. I'm just like, come on.
But you don't have like Gang of Four or two from like Days of Wonder from a few years back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can think about it for a little bit, but yeah, I don't know. I'm being ridiculous, but yeah, at the same time, I want to make fun of everybody. So
you're allowed to have a dissenting opinion. I will allow it.
Okay. Well, then as long as you're properly made fun of for your choices, then I don't feel
probably
bad
gonna
about
hate my third choice here. Then. So.
Surprise, Diamonds 2. Okay, so I guess I should go with mine.
Yes, please, go with your number 2 so we can make fun of you.
Say, Carcassonne is my number 2. The reason why I picked Carcassonne is because it is the original tile laying game. And even though it has like the tile laying stuff, it lays the foundation for all the other further tile laying games. And while doing so, it still has an awesome feeling to it. Like at this point, I don't want to play Carcassonne. I'd rather play like I was going to say Isle of Trains.
Isle of Trains. Well, I'd rather play Isle of Trains too. But.
I would rather do that too. But Sky Isle. I'd rather play that. And I'd rather play a Cacao still. So, I mean, but that's just because I've played Carcassonne so much and have had that all down. But if you haven't, you should. And for anyone who's even played the newer games, go back and play Carcassonne. You'll be like, wow, this game's good too.
It is a solid design. I will say that it has fallen out of favor with me simply because I just played it back in the day so much. But it doesn't make it bad game.
Like, oh, I can't even look at it anymore.
I know, it drives me crazy. I'll be honest with everybody. I took Carcassonne off my A-team shelf, and it's in purgatory. But that does not mean that doesn't mean that it's a bad game. It just means that I don't want to look at it on my shelf anymore.
Yeah. My issue with Carcassonne is I believe it is marketed poorly. In that, despite what anybody says, that game should only be played 2-player. It is better just 2 players.
It probably is better as 2-player game. It really is.
I don't know. I say boo to that.
I think that it's, okay, maybe not only play 2-player, but I think it's preferred. In my mind, it would be preferred 2-player.
But how would you? 2-player. No, but how do you jump on, like, if you can only play with 2, how do you jump onto someone's city and, like, try to get in on that?
You totally do with 2 players.
Well, yeah, but it's not as fun because you don't have, like, now you have 2 people working together and the other person's not working on that thing. And you're like, yeah, keep them out.
Well, also, right?
It's so much more fun to play that with 3.
Well, maybe that's true. But
you block people out of things. You're like, yes. And then you high five.
I will put the caveat that it should also be played without farmers. But that's just me.
I don't care. I can do math. Ugh. I don't have problems with math.
Math's not the issue.
It's easy. There's a town there. It gives you 2 points.
I just said math is not the issue.
It's easy.
It's just there's so much downtime with more players. It just it's like playing winter season.
You play the variant where you hold your tile and you look at it and you go, oh man, how am I going to play this tile?
And if you got a rebirth when it came to iOS, because that game is good on iOS.
Yeah, see, it made it faster too.
That's true. TC, Jessica, have you played Carcassonne?
I played Carcassonne on my first meetup with my new game group, so back in July of 2015, and that's the only time I've ever played it, and I've had no desire to play it ever again.
Oh, man, see? So maybe it has fallen out of favor for everybody.
That's it.
Except for smart people.
All right. Well, I say that is a very, very solid and safe choice.
Super safe.
Super safe.
That's
again,
what it's all about. That's essential.
It's going to be a high fidelity moment. Why don't you just put the Beatles White Album on there and be done?
Yep. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's not the White Album. That's Sgt. Pepper's.
Sergeant Pepper, yes.
Yeah. Dark Side of the Moon, Sergeant Pepper's.
Simultaneously.
Yeah, at the same time.
Same time.
All right,
Chris, what's yours?
My number two, and this is was a Dice Hate Me Game of the Year choice, is Fleet. I know it's another card game, but I think it's one of the best card games, ever. I love playing Fleet. I never get tired of playing Fleet, and I chose Fleet because it is a card game that accomplishes engine building without a larger structure to it, like some of the other board games that have engine building.
It's still like Splendor.
I'm beginning to think Chris is just listing stuff that he's going to be putting in his quiver. Like,
yeah, like I'm pretty much thinking about it. Yeah, I was already said I'm putting Fleet in my quiver for sure.
Yeah,
No Thanks is going in there too, buddy. I can guarantee you that. So you're right. Hey, this is the official quiver essential list. So, quiver
TM,
quiver essential, right. Quiver TM essential. Yes, exactly. This is nuts, but you're right. Okay, so, but Fleet, come on, Fleet is fantastic. It's so fun to play. It's a solid design. Matt and Ben are great just to begin with, but just it's one of those games that when we first played, TC, you were there in the first play. And mm-hmm. at first we were like, when we played three player with Sherilyn, and we were just like, we got through and we're like, man, Shrimp is so overpowered. God, how's anybody ever going to play this game again? It's so overpowered. And then we played a game. We're like, man, Shrimp is so underpowered. Like, how did anybody ever believe Shrimp was overpowered? So it's like, it's one of those that keeps, every time you play it, you see nuances to it. You can get into a groove and you can kind of get that feeling during the middle of the game where you're like, man, I'm doing really well. And at the end of the game, you're like, man, I'm really sucking. You know, it's like, it gives that ebb and flow to it, so to speak, you know, and it's just so good. It's such a fun game to teach to people and see their eyes light up when they see new strategies occur to them during the middle, or they see that, like, a, you know, how less obvious licenses and boat types could work to their advantage. And I love seeing people. I also love the repeat factor of Fleet. Like, you can play Fleet with people and you get used to their style. And, like, so I know if I'm playing with TC or anybody who's ever played Fleet with me before, I cannot bid on Shrimp.
Because you can, you just don't get it for four.
I don't get it for four. No, I never get it for four because nobody who's ever played with me is ever going to let me get Shrimp for cheap. And so sometimes I overbid for Shrimp and I'm just like, that's my downfall. It's my doom. I'm done playing this game. But, you know, sometimes every now and then I'll get away with it because I can wait and another Shrimp contract comes out later and people can't afford it. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get it for cheap. And this is going to be awesome. So, but yeah, it's just, then you also see people who have certain trends they try, and they try something new during the game. You're like, what are they doing? Oh, this is going to be awesome. I want to see what happens. So even more fun when, I mean, I would say even more fun, but a lot of fun when also included with Arctic Bounty. And of course, Fleet Wharfside is a different experience as well, but still so much fun to play. But Fleet is an absolute essential for your game library. No arguments there, right? Exactly. Who's going to argue against that?
Well, it is about fish.
It doesn't have camels in it, but it's, you know, fish are awful close.
I like Fleet. I don't know. I don't know if I think Arctic Bounty is actually essential, but I think it's like...
I don't think it's essential either.
Once you've played it a few times, I think it's really helpful. The only problem is like the teardown. I just... Ugh.
Yeah.
If I put in like a bunch of different new ones, then I have to like tear it down and take those out and put new cards in.
I think Fleet with Gone Fishing cards is the essential.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So gotta put Gone Fishing. You have cards. To have the Gone Fishing cards in there. And even Matt and Ben say they wish that was part of the main Fleet box now. So, yeah.
Yep, anyway, super helpful.
There's number two for me. So,
but Jessica does. But Jessica disagrees. But that's fine.
Why, Jessica? Come on.
Why would you say that? I've only played it a couple times, and I enjoyed my plays of it.
Oh, okay.
All right. And Daryl doesn't care.
Nope. He has his third choice.
Which we're all going to make fun of.
Yeah, let's all make fun of it.
Okay.
Okay, you ready?
I can't because I've never played it.
Oh, my God.
My third choice, I'm going off book.
Going off book.
I'm going off book.
Oh, no.
My third choice is going to be probably one of the best two-player games I've ever played, and that is Jaipur.
No.
Yes.
You can't cheat.
Yes.
You cheat.
Change it up. Yeah.
Jeff Ward,
he had another two-player game on there until he mixed it up, and he audibled with this one.
I originally had Stratego. I did. But Jack Poor, I can play that game anytime. Les and I play that game just nonstop. Anyone we've ever taught it to absolutely loves it and actually ends up buying it for themselves. It's just a really, really good card game that teaches hand management, a little bit of resource management, but then it's also kind of pressure luck on making sure you get enough. Like, is someone going to cash in their gold before you can get it to get the higher value, the coins? You have to manage camels. There's freaking camels in the game, so you know it's freaking awesome. Jaipur. There's a dead panda in it, for God's sake. Come on.
I think Daryl should take a bow because that is a good choice.
I agree. Jaipur is one of the best two-player games ever made. Hands down.
Wow. No sarcasm?
No, it is. Jaipur is fantastic.
No, you win. You win.
You win.
It is. It's great.
That's right.
Ah, yeah. Good choice.
Excellent. Excellent choice, Daryl. Well done. See, we're making the number three picks we're making up for the first two.
Stop it.
All right, Jessica, why don't you give your surprise third pick then? If we didn't say it enough, good job, Daryl, on number three.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much.
We're Jessica, being sincere. We're so being much. Sincere.
Hold on. Jessica, have you played Jaipur?
Yeah, I have. I love it.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah.
I hate the rest of you guys.
We all love it. Come on.
All right. So for my third pick, I was very smart in my choice because none of you guys have played it. So you can't comment on it.
Ooh.
But the game is one where there are a bunch of, it's a little bit heavier than my two previous picks, and it has a bunch of different mechanics. It's one you can play with family, but it's also one that even I think heavier gamers would enjoy.
Old maid. It's got,
what?
Old maid.
No. So it's got some worker placement, a little bit of dice rolling, so a little bit of randomness in there, and a bunch of resource management, and that's Madurus from Haba.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a new one. Yeah.
I love this game so much, and I keep thinking about it. Like, I'm thinking of, like, sneakily buying it and not telling anybody I bought it because I love it so much, and it's so good. And I really love how the game state changes because as you fill the board up, it really changes your decisions and how you're trying to get more points. So I just think it has a lot of different elements that a lot of people can enjoy. And it's one you can play with like newer gamers and it'd be easy enough for them to catch on. But then it's still, there's lots of interesting decisions you still have to make. So my choice is Madurus.
Madurus. Well, you know, I can't say
either. I just,
that's right.
So it must be wrong. Yeah.
It's totally got to be wrong.
I so badly want to quote High Fidelity. Wait, way to slip in a new one and a bunch of old classic safe ones.
Well, that's what I've been saying all night, dude. Have you had it on mute?
Yeah, I have. Just when I have Skype programmed it. Is Chris talking? Kill sound.
Yeah, totally, dude. Yeah, I've made that reference like four times.
That's fine. He's not listening.
I said the quote, the one quote that Jack Black says that I can't say because there's a naughty word in it.
By the way, for the absolute essentials for film, High Fidelity is one of those top three.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
I've still never seen it.
You got to see it. You probably won't like it, but you got to see it.
Probably not. Oh, I do love John Cusack, though.
TC didn't like it. I don't know why, but...
It's okay. I didn't not like it. It's all right. Like Drive better.
Quickly name off two other ones.
Drive.
Two films?
Yeah.
One I'll say is Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. One of the most underrated films.
That's a great, great movie.
Doctor Strangelove.
Doctor Strange. Oh, yes. Jessica, what are you doing with your life?
I'm a movie freak too, and I just have nothing.
Okay, Jessica. You have three movies you now have to sit and watch before Unpub.
Oh gosh! Oh, I gotta do my final for my class.
There will be blood.
Academics. There will be blood. Yeah. There will be blood. That's a great one.
Yeah. Ugh, no.
Tombstone.
You don't like There Will Be Blood?
No.
What?
Why not?
Why?
No.
I didn't see that one yet.
I will come into your house and I will stab you in your sleep.
Yay.
Yay, Daniel Day-Lewis. Okay. Let's move on. Let's get back to some board games.
I want to watch it. I'm going to watch it tonight.
Oh, what was the other one? High Fidelity, Dr. Strangelove. What's the third one? I will watch those before Unpub.
Oh, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Okay. Yeah.
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang was the one that was a resurgence on Robert Downey Jr.'s career before Iron Man.
He was so good in that movie.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it also discovered Michelle Monaghan. And Val Kilmer is like amazing in it.
Oh, Michelle Monaghan. She's on your, what do you call it? The exceptions list?
Yes.
The Hall Pass list.
The Hall Pass list, yeah.
Hall Pass, yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Just watch Birdman again. It was good.
I just watched Tombstone again, and it was great. You should watch.
I want Tombstone. I want to watch it, but I can't. It's not on anything, so I need to find where I can stream this.
Tombstone. Watch it's it. On Netflix, dude.
Is it on Netflix now?
Yeah, dude.
I'm watching.
I think. Is it on Netflix or Crackle? I can't remember. Oh, it's on one of those two because I just watched it. I mean, anyway, let's get back to board games. This is
mine. My next one is Pandemic.
Fine.
I thought he just said he hated Pandemic.
Yep. And I cannot play it anymore again. But this is the same thing as like Ticket Ride, Carcassonne, Pandemic. All these things are essential titles that you will play to death and then
hate them. Right.
Yep. Move on to other things. But you'll have them in your collection and you'll say, look, I am a culturally significant board game aficionado. Great. But no, Pandemic, it started the whole co-op thing, right? It is the original kind of like, let's take a specifically solo game and make it into a cooperative experience, that gave you feedback that was replayable every single time from the same system. Like it's really interesting how that, how having to deal with a random set of kind of like viruses and how they break out creates a game that's like so richly different each time. And like Chris used to say, like he had to keep playing it until they would win. Right. And when they would win, they could stop. But until you win, you don't stop.
So you can't stop.
You can't stop. Yeah. Can't stop. It's one of those games that, yeah, it's addictive because of that. Right. You know, oh man, I could just win if I just had a little bit more. Right. And so just like, we got to play again. I love the different variable. And I know Daryl might point out like, well, what about Lord of the Rings that came out earlier than that with like co-op? Well, it didn't take over things. And the reason why it didn't is because it is a line. You follow it to the end and you do that experience over and over again. So it just didn't have the same sort of system that created a variety of options that made it interesting for like solo play as well as like group play.
Why not just mention the very first co-op game ever put out publicly, which is Arkham Horror.
It's definitely a
landmark co-op title.
Let's talk about another co-op title that has been underrated, and that is Omega Virus. Actually, it's semi-cooperative because it does tell you in the rules that if you want to shoot someone, you can.
Help me.
Ha ha ha, human. Puny human.
Anyway, I picked Pandemic because, you know, classic essential title. Like I said, classic essential game, also modern. It's older, but I think that's kind of where they'll all be with like essential titles. They got to be all these games are kind of 2000s to 2010, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably so.
I don't know. But I do feel bad. I look at this list and I go, there's no thematic games, right? So for anybody looking for a thematic fix, this is really tough. The essential thematic game is a tough.
The essential thematic game is number three on my list. So
no,
it's not. I was going to, you know, which one I was going to try to put on there, but I'm not going to. Arkham Horror.
Yep.
because it is the ultimate thematic cooperative game. I mean, Eldritch is easier to play, but Arkham is the essential. Like, if you really want to dig into Lovecraft, you want to get into a game that's going to take you hours to play and, like, tons of variable things happening in the game, and it's cooperative, and it's all, and you go mad, and you're going to hate it for a little while, and then you're going to love it. Arkham is the essential to choose. But I couldn't put it on my list with good conscience because not everybody's going to like playing Arkham. It's also one that obviously takes a long time to play. It's got a high learning curve for new people coming into the game. So if you're looking for an absolutely essential thematic game, though, and you have any inkling around Lovecraft whatsoever, Arkham Horror should be the one, in my opinion. But you're right. Thematic games are tough because not everybody's going to be into the same theme. They tend to be a lot more involved than some of these other ones are. And so the essentials that you get out are ones that we're mentioning that you probably will play a lot. And unless you're like me, and Arkham is still like probably the game that in my collection I played the most, it's, you know, it's hard to get to the table.
Yep.
So, but anyway.
I think that's fair. And it's hard to pick one that like is universally really going to be loved.
Oh, absolutely.
And that, man, that's tough. Anyway.
So my number three is, it's kind of a safe, not necessarily a safe pick, but it's one that has, I have played a ton because it comes out at cons, it comes out at family gatherings, it comes out when you're over and it's late night and you're like, what do we play? Or the kids are around. Like, I'm over at Dan's house and the kids are around, they want to play something fun, and this always gets suggested, and that is Vegas. I think that Vegas or now Las Vegas, but
okay.
Again, part of the Quiver Essential line, by the way. You can totally fit that. Put that in your quiver. But Vegas is just so, it's another pressure luck game in the vein of Can't Stop, but a different type. So I wanted to include that because pressure luck games are generally pretty fun for a large group. You know, most people will take to them pretty well and they're like, oh, I could try for this, but I don't know. And it has interesting decisions to it. And sometimes you can really rock the game out and you're getting like 400 grand. And sometimes you're like, I got 120 grand a couple of games ago that I played. And I'm just like, I still had fun because you just never know how your placement into the hotels and things, or not hotels, but casinos and things are going to pan out. But it's just, it's one of those that, you know, when it first came out, I didn't malign it necessarily, but I was a big fan of Aaliyah Eyack to Est. And it takes the core mechanic of Aaliyah Eyack to Est and distills it down into its pure essence. And takes the pressing your luck of putting dice into specific spots to get a reward. And it doesn't have all the other point scoring nuances that might be heavily accessed, or Order of the Gilded Compass, which is the new one, which, you know, Jessica got for Christmas. It's just so easy to teach. It's easy to play. It's still fun, no matter if you're a gamer or a new gamer or whatever. It's just when somebody says, let's play some Vegas, I'm like, absolutely. So that would be my number three for an essential. Again, all three of the ones that I mentioned could be fit inside your quiver. Just throwing that out there. But I tried to think about other big box games like Ticket to Ride. I mean, since you had Ticket to Ride, TC, it was like, you know, that was one that I considered for my list as well. But it's like there are lots of big box lists that are big box games that are on my A-team shelf, but they're not going to be, for a lot of different gamers, essentials that they should have unless they're more into those complex or intricate big box games. And again, to be quite honest, reason why Isbahan is excluded is that Isbahan should be part of the essentials for everybody. But
I think it should be.
Absolutely. 100%. So we'll put that as the number one group choice. Isbahan should be on the list.
Well, anyway. I don't think it's so underrated. Like nobody, some people just don't know about it.
I think, That's part of it too.
What was that?
I think it was just like the idea that like, I think it's so innocuous. Like it literally, like it maybe like looks colorful when you have it on the table, but like when it just doesn't invite play.
It doesn't.
I'm being serious. I know that sounds weird to say it doesn't invite you to play it, but it like, you look at the box, you're like, guy on camel, right? Not drawn that great.
Right.
Okay. And then you open up the box and it's like, okay, I like that there's like pastel colors here. And then there's like dice and they just look like regular dice, but there are some gold ones. You're like, okay. But nothing screams like ILO production, right? Like if this was done by like like ILON's got the cool French art and all those other cool things going on, and all the cards had art on them, like the special cards, you'd probably be like, wow, this game is awesome. And you'd see it everywhere. But like, I just think like, it's good, but it's not, it's lackluster in the sense that I want to like pick it up and play it. But it when you true. Play it, oh.
Yeah, when you play it and you realize everything underneath it. Yeah, you once you convince people to play it, and I think TC, you're spot on with it. It's like, it's not ugly, but it's not like going to fly off the shelf. Like you said, if somebody was to take Isfahan today and give it that really big art treatment and the, you know, like cool custom things and all the things that you could put on the table, people go, whoa, what is that? You know, it's like, it would probably be in a lot of people's top tens. And after they play it, it is, because they love it, because it's a fantastic game. Obviously, we've whipped that camel to death on this show. But but anyway, so those are our essentials. We only were able to do top threes because Daryl, for whatever reason, decided we'd only do top threes. But I think it was a good. It was a good discussion. It kept it to a certain amount of limits. And I think that all these, I don't disagree with any of these. I mean, obviously, I haven't played Madeiras, so I don't know what to make of that game. But so all of you take that one with a grain of salt, especially with that.
The reason why I kept that as a three is I didn't want a 3-hour podcast.
No, you're right. You're right. That was perfect. It was a perfect amount of discussion. And now here are 12 or at least 11 solid games, because Jessica is the only one person who's played Madeiras. But 12 solid games you could put into your collection and probably should be essential to your collection. So if you don't have these in your collection, you should probably go out and seek them. Or if you have not played them, at least you should go out and seek to play them, no matter if you decide to add them to your collection or not.
Yes, you're here.
Absolutely. All right, so obviously some of you are going to have different choices. We love getting feedback. And we would love to hear what your top three essential games are. So you can always tweet at us on Twitter individually or to the at the State of Games account on Twitter, or email us on Gmail at thestateofgames@gmail.com. So if that's wrapping up that portion, let's move on to the backside of the podcast. Whee! So we're going to go through our notable quick Kickstarters pretty quickly. Some of these are kind of jokes, but there is one discussion item I'd like to bring up. But the first one was added, I can only guess, by Jessica.
Why?
Because
it's a game on Kickstarter? Yeah.
It's called, what is it, Corny Corey?
It's called Liquid Courage.
Liquid Courage, gotcha.
And it is a game with super cheesy pickup lines. It's a drinking game with hilarious pickup lines. I'm just like, if you look down here, I can't read it because it has a word that I don't like to say out loud. It's not that bad, but the jokes and the
stud,
the pickup lines. Yeah.
Girl, I put the STD in stud. All I need is you.
No, if you go down further, the card that has the number 4 on it. This is why.
I'll say it. We can say it.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Warning. There, it's not really a bad word, but anyways, okay. You from Iraq? Because I want to watch you Baghdad ass up.
Why?
It is so bad. It's so bad.
This is one of those games. I put this in the category of games that you like Munchkin, you break out, you play one time, you laugh, and then you just put it into the vault of like death.
Daryl, you have to look at this Kickstarter page, because the graphic design just in general.
Bad.
I don't want to look at bad graphics.
Like stripper silhouette images on the card.
And they're not like that, but they're jagged. They're like JPEG. They got the JPEG jaggies.
They just Googled image and they used all the stripper silhouettes
and the drunk people silhouettes. Yeah
What the hell font are that is those cards in?
It's a good one. I mean, that's a solid font.
It's typeface. Anyway, it's the same typeface that I'm blanking now, but the Wotzelpog game about serving drinks. I can't even remember what it's a good game, but the graphic design, that's horrible.
I don't even want to talk about this one.
It's yeah. Okay. Well, let's move on because this don't back this. I'm sorry. We're just showing it to you for a reason. But there is a link to it on the podcast at the state of or at dicehateme. Oh my God, what is wrong with me? Dicehateme.com. If you want to,
we just
to
don't
have
encourage on the dice state the state of games. We do not encourage binge drinking. We care for our listeners,
even though we sound like we've been drinking.
So you have 3 hours to just sit through a podcast, as opposed to 3 hours in a hospital sitting through a podcast while you're getting your stomach pumped. We don't like that. And yeah.
All right. So let's move on. And this is my discussion topic. I will release it into the wild, and then I will accept any sorts of discussion you want to bring up. But why is Munchkin on Kickstarter?
I guarantee, because they didn't think that Shakespeare would be a good enough theme, and they didn't think it'd be popular demand as in everything else. And so they're like, let's just put it on Kickstarter and see if people like it, then they'll back it. And I guarantee that's what they did. And sure enough, because it says Munchkin, people are going to back it. And oh my gosh, look, they did.
Number one. Number one. They didn't think it would sell enough. Who cares? Print enough. You can put it out into the wild and see if it sells. Don't, I mean, just come on. You put it on Kickstarter, a $30,000 goal. It's Munchkin. It's got the word Munchkin on it. Even though it's Munchkin Shakespeare, everybody's going to be like, oh, that sounds funny and fun. And that's different than like, you know, Munchkin whatever. I can try that one. That'll be fun because then we get to have fun and you would be all literary. You know, it's like, dude, come on. Really? I mean, I don't say that about much. If you want to use Kickstarter, then fine. Use Kickstarter. It's fine. But it's just like Munchkin has made so many millions and millions of dollars over the past years. Why do you need to put it on Kickstarter?
So, I don't know. I think they're losing money by doing it. So it is what it is, I guess.
I mean, arguably, could we say that Steve Jackson shouldn't be, are you saying Steve Jackson shouldn't be using Kickstarter?
No, I think that the Ogre Project was a completely good idea to use.
Yeah, that was sweet.
Yeah, because that's completely.
Thumbs up to that, because it's crazy.
No, I'm not, yeah. I'm not bashing them. I'm just.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to use Kickstarter, I mean, you can use it for certain things. And you're right. I mean, I get you what you say, and you think like, well, Munchkin Shakespeare seems completely out of left field. And it kind of does, but at the same time, when you see John Kowalik's, like, you know, caricature of Shakespeare here, you're like, well, duh, that's totally Munchkin. It's like, do you have any, you know, questions about it at all? And I love this where it says Munchkin Shakespeare, prepare to fire the Shakespearean canon. And it's talking about canon as in the Shakespeare's, yeah.
Shakespeare,
C A N O N. All right, so C A, yeah, exactly. And there's somebody opening a book and a cannonball is coming out, which I think is, I mean, that's Munchkin. It's hilarious. I think that people would have fun playing Munchkin Shakespeare. It's like, but it's on Kickstarter, and it's like, okay, well, all right. But you know what? That's just slight belly aching. It's fine.
Everything's fine.
This
is a rambunctious podcast, by the way.
It is very rambunctious.
Hey,
Ignore us. Nothing
what?
To see here.
What is this?
Oh, this next one? Have you not clicked on that one yet?
I didn't click on this.
The giant crabs? If you've ever wanted giant crabs, here's your chance, by the way.
Giant crabs.
And trust me, you don't want giant crabs. But if you do want giant crabs, you should go check out this.
You have personal experience. Yes,
I have had giant crabs. Not what you're thinking, Jessica. But I have, you know, I had giant crabs as pets at one point. Anyway, if you ever have one, what? I have.
This is one of, I like this project, by the way.
I think it's hilarious. And
he had two, one called Itchy and one called Scratchy.
But no, it's totally cool. I mean, I just brought this because I came across it and I was like, it seemed funny. But they're serious. I mean, this is miniatures you'd use in a miniature 28 millimeter, which is a very popular format or size format for fantasy miniature games. If you want to have a giant monster crab for your campaigns, this is the place to get them. And that's they're so well weird. Done. Yes.
Yeah, it's well done. I was like, it's just weird that it's just one.
Just one
it's
just dude.
Like, well, yep. This is what you get. It's one guy.
Some go. Dude is like, hey, I made a monster crab. What should we do with it? Well, let's put it on Kickstarter. And it's not like they're making billions off of it. Right now, it's like $564. But it's like, if you want a resin monster crab for your campaigns, there it is on Kickstarter. And that's what Kickstarter is for. That's awesome. Just like, do it.
Yeah, but it's like $6 or $15. Like, I mean, it's like $18 to get three resin crab monsters,
which is pretty cheap for
like
resin.
For seven you get one. I don't know. That is a weird find in this. Such a small goal and such a small thing.
I know. Yeah. I saw it. So I thought I'd bring it
Whatever.
Up.
Whatever. I like it.
That's the spirit of Kickstarter right there. All right. So the other ones that I had on my list, so my final that I have on my list is Archon. I don't know how many of you out there have ever played Archon. But
I've never heard of it.
It is a classic computer game that was adapted and put on the NES at one point, but it is a chess variant. I know, you know, when we talk about chess variants, but it's actually a really good chess variant where you have, you know, fantasy creatures that battle each other. They all have special abilities. So you're playing chess versus, like, they all have stat bars and they do battle and arena and different things like that. But they finally adapted it. These people have adapted it and put it on for an actual board game instead of the computer game, which I'm fascinated by. It's $50 Canadian dollars. So about, well, at this point, the exchange rate says about $38. So you get a magnetic board game, a 3D magnetic board game with all the Archon pixel style pieces and 2D. And then, but you can upgrade to get the entire board game with all kinds of different Archon pieces for it, things like that. So if you really, really like Archon, then you can do this. However, the goal is only $746. And right now, they have $421 of that $746 goal, and they have a very ambitious looking setup for their thing. But their Kickstarter page is only like two words. It literally has a paragraph, then it has a video, and then it has rules, and then the risk is challenges. It says, I have school, so I might be very busy sometimes. So, back at your own peril, I'm just saying.
What a... Oh, God. Hey, anyway. These games. What is it? This is like a return to Wild West Kickstarter.
It is.
Hey,
awesome.
You know what? I'm just going to mention one here real quick.
Please.
Actually, two. I know Empires of the Void 2 is with Ryan Laucott.
It is.
And, you know, Red Raven Games. And I know that that one's going to be pretty sweet. So if you in any way like... I don't think it's... I think it's more along the lines of, like, say, like, Above and Below and stuff like that, as opposed to the original Empires of the Void. So if you kind of like that kind of game, I mean, this is looks like a cool... spacey resource game with some fantastic art. Now he's got a different color palette. It's awesome. The color palette on this.
It's true. Yeah, well, it looks gorgeous. That. It always does. Well, Ryan's games look just fantastic.
I was going to say, wow, it's a Ryan game. Who's surprised that it's pretty?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's space pretty.
Yeah, it's got a slightly different aesthetic.
So. Yeah. And the other one was Dinosaur Island.
Oh, yeah, Dinosaur Island. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's like, John Gilmore and Brian Lewis are working together on one. I don't know. I mean, I can't speak for the game, but I think I like the cover of it. I think the colors are really interesting. I don't know much about the game itself. I don't know if you guys like it, but I kind of...
I don't like it at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's all fine.
I don't know. I like the blast of color it is. It looks like a blast of neon colors.
I mean, I would play it. It looks fascinating.
Yeah, it looks interesting. I don't know the highest. It looks involved, and that appeals to me actually. But like, you know, it's like you want to build your Jurassic Park, and people have always wanted to have like a dinosaur amusement park building game. So here's one, and hopefully it's really sweet. It's got John Gilmore and Brian Lewis, and but who knows? So I hope they fill out some of the art on the actual board stuff. It looks a little weak at the moment.
It's a little sparse, yeah.
Yeah, so it needs a little help as far as like some of the art on the actual board, but like the rest of the game, I don't know. It looks like it's got a lot of things to do, so I'm something to look forward to for later. And it's totally overfunding, so I'll get to play it at some point.
Maybe art is a stretch goal.
You could be right, Daryl.
It's true.
Know.
Could.
No, it's like, not. I've read about the art.
I was going to say, just like some games, you know, a box or a rule book are stretch goals. So.
Oh, God.
They said they wanted to go for the retro kind of look.
Well, it would be gaudy art.
Like retro 80s. I guess it's 80s, 90s. I don't know.
They probably wanted to go with. They're channeling Mayfair, really. I think is what they're doing.
Oh, God. No, this is a trying. It's just like, it's weird that it's like so, it looks like 1986 or so.
Yeah.
And that's not the right time period for Dinosaur Island. So no,
but that's what they wanted to go for. They actually say that on the Kickstarter page.
Oh, 1986.
Well, that's like kind of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air era. Like that's what they were trying to go for.
Really?
Did you say the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air
thing to say?
It just makes me think of the emblem for the show and how it's got those neon colors and stuff. That's
I mean, it looks kind of like a sitcom.
That's not 1986.
Well, that aesthetic.
Okay.
Yeah. Weird. Okay. I don't understand that aesthetic, but hey, it looks like I could play Flock of Seagulls and play this game.
It's beautiful.
Oh, we are not mocking games.
I think TC is right. This entire episode is all just mockery. We should just call it the one about mockery. He's right. This is a very rambunctious episode. And you know why it is? Everyone out there, a little peek behind the green curtain again for all of us. Signer
Ruby Redbird in front of me.
Well, that's the whole point, is that we are now recording later at night. Normally, we've been recording during the day on Sundays, where we're all as sober as a priest on Sunday. And now, not that we've been drinking, I'm just saying, simply saying, we're all later at night, we're a little bit looser, we're unwinding from the day, we'll probably get a little punch drunk from getting tired, so, yeah, I like that. It's been a good...
our final one...
I just want to thank
our final one.
Not turning into a pumpkin anymore.
What? No,
you're welcome.
Not turning into
a pumpkin. No, I'm glad that Jessica stayed up with us this time. But it's tough because I really like it to end so that we can all go to bed.
All right, so we're just about done. I'll just mention really quickly that Dubai is live on Kickstarter. As of this podcast, there is a long, long way to go for funding, so we definitely need your help. It is a great game. There are obviously some people have brought up some concerns in the comments, which we've all addressed, and a lot of people have been very appreciative of that. We've also taken some feedback into account. So the team at Greater the Games and, of course, Chris and Suzanne have been working on it tirelessly and doing some demos. We'll have demos at PAX East, but by the time this is launched, PAX East will be over. But you'll be able to check it out. If you want to come and ask questions on the actual campaign, please do so, or tweet at GT Games LLC or Dice Hate Me. We'll answer things as much as we can, or even Cardboard Edison on Twitter if you want to talk directly to Chris and Suzanne about it. So please go check out Dubai, see what you can do to help out the campaign there. Other than that, we're going to wrap up the podcast with our winner of the collector's edition of Tavarua, the signed collector's edition of Tavarua. Thank you from Far Off Games for basically, you know, donated this after they found out that it was the Dice Hate Me Game of the Year for 2016. And I love Tavarua. A lot of people out there have agreed with my choice, and they've discovered Tavarua since actually going through the parking lot after we finished up PressCon a couple weeks ago, or last week, but a couple weeks by the time this comes out. Some guy actually stopped me in the middle of the parking lot because I had Tavarua up on the top, and he goes, "What is that?" And I said, he said, "Is that a surfing game?" And I said, "Yeah." And so I stood there talking to him about it for a good 5 or 10 minutes, and he's like, "I'm going to go right home and order that, man. That sounds amazing." So I just, everybody who comes across the game thinks it's beautiful. It's a lot of fun. So I want to thank Far Off Games for donating this for our giveaway. But anyway, enough about all that. We asked all of you to write in and give your favorite games of 2016. And before we announce the winner of Tavarua, let's run through the list. The number one overwhelming choice was Terraforming Mars. So all of you out there seem to really like Terraforming Mars. I cannot disagree with that as a number one choice, other than the fact that I love Tavarua, but Terraforming Mars is a great, great game. It was in my list. And of course, Jessica will agree with that.
Absolutely.
A little spoiler. Great Western Trail, though, should have been there, but that's okay, everybody.
I do love Great Western Trail. The more I play Great Western Trail, the more I like it. It's just I played it at PressCon, had a great time, and I really look forward to get that into the table much more. So there was a tie for number two. So number two, the first tie was Manhattan Project Energy Empire, which has gotten lots of accolades from people. I've yet to play it, but I'd like to. And the other one that was tied, which I cannot thank you all enough, was New Bedford. And we by no means said for people to nominate Dice Hate Me Games titles, obviously, but I'm glad that a lot of people out there have loved New Bedford and are supporting it and have chosen that for their game of 2016. So thank you all for doing that.
It was really funny because all the people that mentioned that their favorite was New Bedford were like, and we're not saying this just because it's Chris's game. So,
well, I'm glad they added that caveat, but all of you who did, your check is in the mail. So that's all we're saying. No, but thank you so much for doing that. In no particular order, the other choices that did not have ties for one or two, there's automobiles, naturally, and that's a solid choice. Captain Sonar, which I have yet to play, but I wanted to play it. I just haven't found anybody who's got it together for a group yet. Feast for Odin, very popular choice, huge and sprawling. Happy Salmon, which is just always insane to see in any gaming group or at cons, because everybody's going like, what are they playing? And you go, Happy Salmon. Hive Mind, which I have not played. I don't even know much about Hive Mind, so I'd have to look that up. Mystic Veil, which is a great system that has been only improved with the expansion that's come out for it. Scythe, another popular choice, which is a fantastic production. Star Wars Rebellion, so good. Just such a good game. And Survive the Card Game, which I don't know anything about.
I don't either.
I looked it up, and if it's what they say it is, I looked it up on Board Game Geek, and it's a very, very small, independent design. I don't know if you guys looked this up or not. I thought maybe they were talking about regular Survive, but it is released in 2016, and it's called Survive the Card Game, and I'll let you check out what the description is. It's set in a hostile nuclear winter where the players are a small band of survivors attempting to do whatever it takes to outlive each other. So it's a
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's a cooperative card game with different card types and things. I don't know if it is has been published yet or if it's something that is self-published and is only released in certain things. But, hey, interesting choice. I mean, if it's that good for it to be your 2016 game of the year, awesome. So,
and I just want to say, you know, it's like to everybody that didn't pick Xenon Profiteer, I understand because it was technically listed as 2015. Mm-hmm. A little bit of a problem there. But, you know, I know if it would have clearly said 2016, it would have been your number one. So I appreciate everybody who wrote it in anyway. It was overwhelmingly written in.
All the right choices.
But yeah, next year we'll do it again.
Hey, there was a Xenon Profiteer in the wild at PressCon, and I was like, yep. Hey, look, Xenon Profiteer, and TC did the whole diva thing of like, don't draw attention to it, man. It's fine. He's like, don't make it awkward. Don't draw attention to it.
Yep.
Yeah.
I wanted them to experience it for the first time, and for the first time really have that full experience so that he can play it for, you know, years to come, like a classic should be played.
Absolutely. Minutes to learn, a lifetime to master.
Yep.
All right. So without further ado, we're going to announce our winner of the Tavarua, the signed deluxe edition of Tavarua, collector's edition of Tavarua from Far Off Games. Jessica?
Yes. So I took all of the entries and put their names into a random list generator. And the winner is fellow admirer of Stefan Feld, Daniel Newman.
Rigged.
I felt bad when it came up because I actually know him, but
we all know Dan.
It was random, and it did it. So
Dan doesn't like hamburgers or dexterity games. So pick a new name.
All right, Daniel. Congratulations. So either I can mail that out to you. Obviously, you know how to get in touch with me, so you can get in touch with me. I was going to say, you can mail it out, or I can bring it to Unpub. I'll put it in my Unpub pile right now. That'll save me on some shipping costs. That'll be amazing. Well, congratulations, and thank you all so much for entering this. We love getting feedback from all of you. We like to see what all of your favorite games are. So, again, if don't hesitate to email us or tweet at us. We'll have other contests coming up in the future during this year. Some cool things, both Dice Hate Me Games and Greater Than Games titles, but possibly maybe some prototype stuff. We'll see how that things go. All right. So no Dice Hate Me Games news other than the fact that we'll be at PAX, which is already going to be passed by the time you listen to the podcast. So it was an amazing time. I can just predict it's an amazing time. But Unpub news, go ahead.
Too late.
How many beers have you had tonight?
I this is Monday night. See, this is not Sunday where I'm sitting around the house because it's lazy. I'm actually up. I'm into it, like you said. I may or may not have a cranberry ginger shandy in me. So this is all good.
Oh.
Yeah, you start to get it now.
Yeah. Leinenkugel, cranberry ginger shandy. It's awesome.
Shiner, Ruby Redbird.
Mm-hmm. That's good, too. I was about to go into a beer discussion. Why am I going to? Unpub News, Unpub 7, a.k.a. Unpub Prime. Is going to be a week away by the time this launches. It's St. Patrick's Day weekend in Baltimore, Maryland at the Baltimore Convention Center. Come on by. Play games on Saturday and Sunday. It's absolutely free admission. You have a very good chance of leaving with a free board game. Just coming and playing games and giving honest feedback on them to help the designers. So we have a lot of vendors this year. We're up from the 5 we had last year. We have 10 this year. So there's lots of places for you to walk around, spend some money, talk with friends, go across the street to the Pratt Street Ale House afterward. Lots of good times. So please come.
There's also a possibility you could walk away with a quiver. I don't know if anybody's heard of those, but...
if you're a designer, yes.
Well, I'm going to say for Designer Day. If you're a designer, Designer Day coming up. But I'm just simply saying, quiver... Not yes, the official, not the official sponsor of Unpub or State of Games, but
yes, we should actually have John from Quiver on.
No, I'd love to talk to them. Yeah,
they are a very, very small company, and that's why there's only one color out. They haven't done color variants and all that. But it's like if you're going to do one thing, do that one thing really well, and they certainly have done that. So they have donated quivers, and we will be auctioning some off and raffling some off for the designers. So it'll be good. It'll be really, really good.
All right.
And you can play TC games and just say this game is just absolute horseshoe.
Horseshoe.
I'm trying to save you from bleach, well, okay?
Yeah. So... Yeah, and I'll be there, and you know that automatically makes it worth coming to Unpub.
Absolutely, that's true. It's the only reason I'm going.
Oh, the humility!
Exactly. Yes, well, if you're looking for humility, you've come to the wrong place. So
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm the most humble person I know.
I'm more humble than anybody.
All right, we're going to get out of here before things get out of control, or more out of control than they already are. So that's it for this episode of State of Games. We'll be back next time with even more great board game discussion. Obviously, we love hearing from all of you. Hey, where's our call out to Franz? Or no, Mike Risley. Risley. Was that
it
the
one now?
It was Mike.
It was another Michael.
Was it another Michael?
I finally edited it out so we wouldn't have him in there again.
Oh, too bad. Well, all of you, we love all of you.
Hi, Michael.
But we love hearing from all of you, of course. If you have ideas for future show topics or new segments we can add to the show, email us at stateofgames@gmail.com or tweet them at @thestateofgames. You can also go to dicehateme.com and comment on the podcast or join Guild 1903 on BoardGameGeek.com. There's actually a good discussion of the last episode on BoardGameGeek right now in our guild, so go and comment on those, including the three slackers that are on the podcast right now. So go and check that out and answer some of the questions that are coming up. So you can also hit me up on Twitter at @DiceHateMe. What about the rest of you?
You can find me on Twitter at @GetLouder. Lost for words.
This is not a new thing.
I'm on the internet. I just keep hitting, I don't want to keep saying the Twitter thing because I say it right at the very end and the beginning. So I'm going to say... Hey, you can check me out on the Perfect Information podcast for some deep design segments where we get into deep design.
And you can find me on Twitter at @FeldFangirl. You can also check out my highlights and lowlights on the What Did You Play This Week podcast. And starting this week, I am also a co-host on a new podcast called It's Our Turn, Women on Gaming.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So until next time, this is Dice Hate Me.
This is Get Louder.
This is Puppy Shogun.
And this is Feld Fangirl.
Saying thanks for listening. And May all your rolls be sixes.
Jessica was so late.
What?
What?
No, I wasn't. You were.
What? All right, so we don't have to stay on here much longer. TC, give us your top three that you held back on.
That I held back on?
Yeah.
Okay, so my top three that I thought were essential, but not like they're not modern essentials. Hanabi.
Boo.
The Resistance Avalon.
Are you sure you don't mean One Night Revolution?
One Night Revolution Vampire?
Right. One Night Revolution Werewords.
And then Through the Ages.
Ooh.
Was my
what?
Wow. Because
it has a second edition now.
It does.
So
have
Through
a second
the
edition.
Ages, second edition.
So
I have not played
long.
It yet, but I hear it's streamlined. Yeah, oh, that's what I'm saying. If you're gonna have an essential title, you can't just have, like, we didn't have any party games.
It's true. I almost
nobody said Codenames.
I considered Codenames. I considered Codenames.
But we didn't have the Resistance or Codenames or anything, or even Saar or Yinch, right? And that's what I was gonna say as well, because I wanted to put Saar or Yinch on the list because I wanted people to stop with the stupid chess analogies all the time. Like, the only abstract game you know is chess,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So
yeah.
chess. So plays another. There should be a classic one that's on there, but, you know, whatever. Santorini, play that too. But yeah, Through the Ages is a long game, but it fits the thematic and Euro. So I was like, yeah.
Through the Ages is a solid choice, but I will say that your the one you just did, fairly eclectic, but at the same time,
that's what I'm
not
saying, though. It's eclectic, but it's still good. Just have them. Just have those games. Who wants the other games when you can have those three?
I agree with all those except for Hanabi, but that's just me.
Hanabi's great.
No, can't stand it. Anyway, that's just me.